So good morning. I'm still not used to this thing, even though I have to use it for some of the other classes I lead. Makes me feel like, somebody on MTV. Although I haven't watched MTV in many, many years. But I'm assuming that's what they... It makes it all better. Now that I know I look like Madonna. Yes, indeed. Okay, so we'll start with some prayers. If you open your prayer book on the peach-colored sheet, which is in the front, I think, yeah. So we'll start with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra, and we'll do the four immeasurables in English. And we'll skip the Tibetan for today. Tayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Tayata mune mune maha munaye soha. Tayata mune mune maha munaye soha. The four immeasurables. May all sentient beings have happiness in the cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering in the cause of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. So let's start by doing a short breathing meditation to just settle our minds. We can start with, as Geshe-la teaches, with the nine-round breathing, which helps clear out any stale energy that we might have in our minds. It helps balance, bring to balance the energies in our body and mind stream, which helps us, which also helps, which is a prerequisite to calming our mind. So, in bringing with it concentration and clearness of thought. So, if you don't know already, the nine-round breathing, you use your left hand and you close your right nostril, breathe through your left and out through your right. 3 times. Then you use your right hand, close off your left nostril, and breathe through your right and off to your left. Or am I doing the opposite way? No, I think that's the right way. You start with the left hand. That's right. And then you breathe through both nostrils. And if that's too complicated, you can use His Holiness the Dalai Lama, so that's an authentic teaching, you can use his method, which is you take 3 deep breaths in and out. So whichever is more, you feel more comfortable with. So I'll do it with the 9-round breathing. You can do, if you wish, His Holiness's simpler version. So yes. So we take the breaths all the way into our tummy, and out. And so for just a few minutes, we'll just focus on our breathing, on our breath.
So when they asked me to lead today, I was thinking about, you know, what is it that would be useful for all of us, you know, me included, right? And so, you know, I was thinking that one of the things that they continually, Geshe-la and all the teachers continually stress, and they tell us is the main point of practice, of Buddhist practice, is loving kindness, right? So, there's, you know, this deep love, this wide, expansive love, which we understand in the context of great compassion, which we'll talk about in a minute. And I don't know about you, it doesn't come naturally to me. You know, there's other meditations or practices that I can do that I seem to grasp much more easily, at least intuitively, than I can, you know, loving kindness or this whole idea. Partly because it seems so vast, right? So, so when they talk about loving kindness, it's this idea that not just that we must love others, right? Or we must be kind to others, and we must be generous to others, or patient with others, and so forth and so on. Which we must. I mean, that's the basic prerequisite. But it's this idea of this vastness. You know, they talk about it's love with great compassion, right? So those of you who have been coming, you know what it's about. This idea that we're all looking for happiness in this life and in future lives, and of course leading to the ultimate happiness of all, right, which is liberation and enlightenment. That's the Buddhist path. But when we see that, when we understand ourselves, right, who we are and how we are and how we act and how we, the disappointments in our lives, the joys in our lives, the disappointments in our lives, the sadnesses in our lives, the lonelinesses, the, you know, so many other emotions that we have, feelings that we have. So those are difficulties, right? Continuous difficulties, both physical and mental, that we live throughout our lives. And it's not just us alone. Every single person and animal, or any being actually, any sentient being in this universe, he or she is going through the exact same set of issues, right? Maybe slightly different. Maybe in a different form, you know, maybe with more success, maybe with less success in dealing with them, whatever, but they're still dealing with the same set of issues that we go through. We just don't happen to really talk about it very much, or we don't know how to express it. But they are, right? And so when we see ourselves and how we are, and we see others and how we are, then it brings this deep sense of compassion for them, right? And so we make this resolution, that's the bodhisattva resolution, right? The bodhisattvas are these beings whose their only reason for existence, if you will, is for the benefit of others, right? So we have heard of or seen people like that, for example. I mean, Mother Teresa was one, probably, you know, Mahatma Gandhi was one, Dr. Martin Luther King was probably one, and, you know, there are many others, right, who we don't know who they are necessarily, but they are around us, all around us, really, living or not. In any case, so the Bodhisattva resolution is to not just to live for ourselves alone or be on the Buddhist path for ourselves alone, but we must help every single sentient being in this universe to also reach the same goal that we are striving for, right? So that's the vastness of it. You know, if you think about it, we can barely just succeed on our, you know, for ourselves, right? So this idea that we have to take on this responsibility to help every single being, right, to reach the ultimate happiness that we are looking for. So that's the incredible vastness of it, and that's the great compassion. And so that's the when Geshe-la talks about, you know, great bodhicitta and the bodhisattva way, that's what he's talking about. And that's the basis of the Buddhist path, right? The underlying it all, of the, if we take all the layers of, you know, of the words and the complexities away, that's really what it's about, right? And so the reason it doesn't come naturally to me, and I expect to others as well, is that, you know, how it just seems so difficult, right? It just seems really, really far away, right? How can we possibly ever do that? I mean, how can we live up to that goal, right? And so when they asked me to lead this session, I thought, well, you know, I'll try to do something that is the hardest for me, right? Because that makes me really, you know, really think about it, right? So that's what we'll talk about today. Hopefully, we'll make some progress. I don't know, but I thought, you know, but the and so for that, I thought that, you know, you all know Shantideva's text, right? The Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life that Geshe-la has been talking about for many, many years, and His Holiness Dalai Lama studies and meditates on every single day. So the first chapter in that book is about that, right? It's the benefits of, you know, it's the benefits of this mind, why we should have this mind. Because that's when if we understand why we should have this mind, what is the benefit of this mind, we will actually want to have that kind of mind, right? This is the mind that brings us to Buddhahood. Right, the enlightened mind. That's what this mind is. Maybe I can. Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask. So it's possible to be a bodhisattva but not a dharma practitioner or have no knowledge of dharma.
Well, you don't have to be Buddhist. But I suspect Dr. King was still a Dharma practitioner by the definition of what the Dharma is, which is living ethically, being kind, you know. So those are universal principles, right? So one doesn't have to be Buddhist to be a Bodhisattva. You know, so it's the mind that, it's basically the mind that wants to help all other beings, right, to bring happiness to them, right? For them to reach their ultimate potential, right? Full potential of their spiritual goal. So that's the mind, really. And that doesn't have to be, it doesn't have, you know, that's why His Holiness Dalai Lama says that, you know, don't leave the path that you're on. You know, whatever path that you feel comfortable with, you know, if you are born in the Christian tradition or in the Hindu tradition or the Muslim tradition or whatever tradition, you know, the Native American tradition, whatever it might be, you know, the whatever you feel comfortable with, you don't have to leave that path. You can still practice Dharma while you're on that path, right? Because what the Buddha taught isn't necessarily, you know, one doesn't have to be, I mean, there are parts of it that does require one to think about it in a particular way, the Buddhist way, if you will, but the basic principles of it are universal. So, yeah. Anyway, so if we understand the benefits of having this kind of mind, then we will want to be like that, right? And that's why, you know, all the teachings always start with the benefits of bodhicitta. You know, every single teaching, no matter what it's about, you know, or every single, you know, like we did this prayer, right? May all beings have equanimity free from attachment aversion and so forth and so on, right? That's why every single prayer, every single practice, every single puja, every single teaching, every single anything in the Buddhist path actually starts with those four lines. In some form or fashion. So they have the three higher trainings, right? So they in the Buddhist path there's what they call the three higher trainings, which is renunciation, compassion, wisdom, and compassion, right? And so we have to kind of we have to understand to be able to generate compassion for others. We have to understand how we are, right? How we every single moment of every single day, right? We are looking for happiness. Every person, right? No matter what they do, they might do the most heinous thing, right? But even a bank robber, when he robs a bank, right? Whether or not he's thinking this is an immoral act or a moral act, right? He's thinking, I'm going to rob this bank because it's going to bring me happiness in some form, right? Or somebody who puts somebody else down, right? They feel, they think they're going to be happy, right? Or whatever they're doing, every single person, there's almost very few examples that I can think of where somebody does something and it's not because they think that it's going to bring them happiness, no matter what that action is of body, speech, or mind. But the interesting thing is that, when we do these things, we are doing it from a deluded mind, they say, right? We don't do it out of pure intention. That's the difference between a virtuous act and a non-virtuous act, right? Whether or not we have pure intention. And pure intention is whether or not we have this bodhicitta mind to be a benefit to others, right? Benefit to ourselves, because we have to, first of all, if we can't be a benefit to ourselves, we cannot be a benefit to others. That's a given, right? So we have to also know how to be kind to ourselves before we can be kind to others, right? But if we don't have pure intention, our actions are only bring us more unhappiness, no matter what we think. Right? We may think it's going to bring us short-term happiness, but actually it brings us long-term suffering. And that's the paradox of our existence. And that's what the Buddha talked about. You know, they talk about, in fact, in Shantideva's first chapter, in a different text, I mean, you know, they talk about we are like moths to a flame, right? You know how moths circle a flame? And at some point, they get tired and they just basically fall into the flame, right? We see the flame, but we continually circle it, right? We can't, you know, and so that's our job on the spiritual path is to somehow break out of that circle, right? That cycle of existence and of birth, aging, sickness, death, etc. that the Buddha talked about, right? That's the moth to a flame. We continually take actions that bring us closer to suffering, then even though we think it's going to, you know, it's going to bring us happiness. And so the idea of that is that the only way we can fix that is if we understand how we are driven by attachment and aversion, right? That's why we do things, because we want it, we want what we like, and we push away what we don't like, right? Those are the two sides of the same coin, attachment and aversion, right? Every action that we take in our everyday, every single day in our lives is colored by some form of attachment or some form of aversion. If you think about your life, you'll see that's actually true. And so if we understand that and we are able to create this we want to remove this attachment aversion, this grasping, right? Grasping and, I don't know, ungrasping, however you want to call it, right? Then that's called renunciation, right? That's the first, you know, training, higher training, renunciation, to be able to renounce. Now, it doesn't mean we have to become hermits. It just means that our actions are not, you know, due to attachment and aversion, right? So we renounce that side of it. And then there's wisdom, which, you know, we understand the nature of reality, which we won't go into today. And the final higher training is compassion, right? The great compassion that we're talking about. And so, you know, so what they say is, because of attachment aversion, our by the way, before I, you know, this isn't very. This is I was reading this commentary of Shantideva's, which is not that well, at least in our tradition here, it's not that well known, or I've never seen other people talk about it. But this is actually by Patul Rinpoche, who was, when I first started studying Buddhism many, many years ago, I actually was in a different tradition. I was in the Nyingma tradition, those of you who know the difference between Nyingma and Gelugpa and all that stuff. And so their master, like we have Pabongka Rinpoche, whose book we studied, Liberation of the Palm of Our Hand, they have Patul Rinpoche, who was a great master in the 19th century, who basically revived Shantideva's text. Until then, for 300 or 400 years, Shantideva's text was kind of forgotten. And so he revived Shantideva's text, and he basically gave all these great teachings on it. And so that's, after that, then more, you know, Gelugpas started picking it up, and so did other traditions, and so forth and so on. So this is a collection of his teachings on Shantideva's text. So, and in it, he says that, you know, because of all our actions of body, speech, and mind. So, you know, actions doesn't mean just acts, right? Like doing things, right? It's actually all our mental actions as well, thoughts, right? Most of our day is taken up by our thoughts, probably. So all of our, you know, because all of our actions are colored by attachment and aversion, we have very few, there are very few actions that we take that are truly virtuous, that aren't, you know, that are truly have pure intention. You know, truly have an attitude of being of benefit to others. And so he says in here, you know, it's interesting because uses very simple words. You know, he says, therefore, if a state of mind of actually wanting to accomplish something good occurs to you, you should be like a blind man who has managed to catch hold of a cow's tail. You should resolve never to lose it, but to develop it more and more. Don't ask your father. Don't discuss it with your mother. Don't let others decide for you. Just make up your own mind and be independent. Do not give yourself over to others. Leave your enemies to their own devices. Let your fields dry up. Practice earnestly instead. Tell yourself, I will truly practice the sacred Dharma. So that's how one has to think, you know, one has to really practice that kind of mind, you know, that that we, once we, if we find that we have this this thought like that, you know, that we have to just grab it and just try to see how we can kind of extend it, how we can have more, you know, how we can do it more and more, right? And once we can, once we see it, once we are able to do it, you know, it just brings great benefit, right? So, you know, it has, so he says in here, and he talks about all the, Shantideva talks about all the many the different analogies and things like that. You know, the analogy, for example, of it being like a wish-fulfilling jewel, right? So the mind that is of is thinking about the benefit of others, it's like, you know, mind that can, that is, you know, it can be of, well, let's see what he says. So it's one becomes a like a true refuge. You know, when we take refuge in the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas and our teachers who we consider like Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, right? What does refuge mean? It means that they are our source of guidance. They are our source of spiritual growth. They are, you know, if we follow them, we will reach. You know, they have been on the path, and we will, you know, practice. You know, we will get to the same places that they've been, right? I mean, that's the idea of refuge, right? That they are true leaders in the spiritual path, right? True guides. And so we become like that, you know, if we are able to have this kind of mind. You know, and so, and he says that, you know, there are three main benefits of this, of this bodhicitta, of this, you know, beneficial, you know, mind of benefit. So this causes one to attain Buddhahood, right? Because that is, you know, ultimately, no matter what else we, you know, all the great practices that we do and all the studying, all the, you know, emptiness and this and that, all these things, right? At the end of it, if we don't have compassion, we can't reach Buddhahood. Right, we can't reach enlightenment. We can't reach, you know, we can't reach the ultimate happiness, right? Which is lasts forever, right? It's not like, you know, ice cream that kind of you eat and you feel really good and then it's over, right? Or a relationship, for that matter, even if it lasts a lifetime, right? It'll still be over, right? Either they leave you or we leave them, whether we die or we leave, you know, leave physically, right? Either way, that relationship will end, right? So, but the Buddhahood does not end, right? This enlightenment, and that's another, you know, another topic. But basically, it's eternal in a way, right? So it doesn't end. That mind continues without suffering, without delusions, you know, and of unimaginable or incredible or vast help to others, benefit to others, right? To be able to bring them to Buddhahood as well. So it causes one to attain Buddhahood. It increases virtue, right? So if we have a mind like that, you know, one who has a mind like that would never, you know, it automatically, one doesn't, you know, engage in non-virtue, right? Because everything is based on pure intention, right? Whatever we do will be of benefit, right? So the, and you know, and if we understand the teachings on karma and so forth and so on, causes and, you know, of causes and results, right? That is why we are like moths to a flame, right? It's because of negative actions we've done in the past. And in Buddhism, it's considered universal. It's a kind of like a gravity. It's like a universal law. It's not like anybody's trying to punish us, right? There's no God who's trying to punish us. Negative actions just happen to create negative results. Positive actions happen to create positive results. So the fact that we're a human being today who is interested in a spiritual path, who has met the teachings and so forth and so on, we've created incredible positive karma in the past. We have done many, many incredibly wonderful things to be able to be here, not just here physically in this space, but any, you know, in this, with a human life, being interested, you know, in whatever spiritual tradition one is in, all that stuff, you know, it's because of amazing amounts of positive things that we have done in the past. But we have a long way still to go, and that's because we have also created negative things in the past, right? So if we are able to create this bodhicitta mind, then we cut the, you know, that root of non-virtue, right? So one doesn't create any more negative actions, right? Or one doesn't commit negative actions. So one doesn't create any imprints for negative results. So it's an amazing thing if you think about it, right? I mean, in Buddhism, we've had countless lives so far. We will have probably countless, or hopefully not countless lives in the future before we attain enlightenment. But still, we will have a lot more lives still left. And so, you know, if we are, so we have had countless lives so far, and we have, created non-virtue, right? And so we are reaping, the seeds that we have sown are kind of, you know, whatever, flowering or whatever you call it now, right? Yeah. Of whatever sufferings we go through, it's because of the seeds that we've created. And so if we are able to create the causes for having this bodhicitta mind, and so that we don't suffer in the future, that's an amazing thing, right? So far we haven't done it. Or we have done it but we haven't succeeded enough, right? We are still growing, right? So every life we have to continue to make an effort, right? The fact that we're here thinking about the bodhicitta mind is because we have created an imprint in the past to be interested in these things. So we have to rejoice in that. You know, there's a lot of good that we have created. But we also have to make sure that we don't waste this life, right? That's what one of the basic, you know, the precious human life that Geshe-la talks about all the time. That's the first thing that one talks about in Lam Rim, right? Is to understand that this life is so precious and that we mustn't waste it, right? That we have to continue practicing, you know, virtue, you know, the bodhicitta mind, so that we can continue again in the next life to meet our teachers, to be interested in the teachings, to again practice the bodhicitta mind, so forth and so on, and continue on and on. That's how we can grow, right? If we're born as an animal, we don't have much of a chance. We have a few chances here and there, you know, to be of benefit. But really, you know, we are driven by instinct, right? We can't really do much active growth of our minds, right? So we need a human life. So we have to continue to practice virtue. So the bodhicitta mind, if we are able to create that, you know, in this life, then, you know, it's amazing, you know, the virtue that we create for to continue to have future lives where we can grow, you know, to get to the ultimate goal. And finally, it causes one to attain Buddhahood, increases virtue, and finally it purifies negative, you know, imprints that we've created. It says it purifies evil. Evil isn't kind of has a lot of connotations. So I don't like to use the word evil, but what they mean is negative imprints, right? Negative imprints that we've created in the past or in this current life. This kind of mind actually helps purify all those things so that they don't ripen in the future, right? And, you know, if you think about it, if you can attain Buddhahood with this mind, increase virtue and cut it out of the root, or cut all our negative imprints of the root, and finally purify whatever negative imprints we've created in the past, what more could we ask for? Right? There's nothing really more that one needs to do. You know, those three things, if we are able to do those three things, it's guaranteed anyway that each of us will attain enlightenment. I mean, that's a given, right? Each of us has, the Buddha said, each of us has the seed, the Buddha nature, right? We have the mind. Each of us has the mind. No matter how rotten we may think we are, or others may think we are, each of us has the potential to become enlightened. And each of us will become enlightened at some point or other, right? Some may take a faster path, and some might take a slower path. But nevertheless, we will all reach the same goal, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. You know, I mean, it's a race that everybody wins. You know, it's a race that everybody wins. And so if you know, so and if we're able to help others in the process, you know, it's an amazing thing. And so that's the, you know, that's the bodhicitta mind that that they talk about. So maybe we'll So maybe we'll do a, Chris, if you could. So I have this meditation. I thought that we'd do a meditation or two. Maybe we won't get to the second one. But it's led by one of my teachers, Venerable Rene, who some of you met when he was here, I don't know, a couple of months ago. But this is a recording of one of his, I go to one of his retreats at least once a year. And so this was earlier in the year. He was leading this meditation. And so I thought we would do it. And it's a, maybe just for 5 minutes, you know. And so it's a really wonderful way. And he's a master, you know. He has realized these things. So, you know, instead of hearing it from me, you know, it's much better if you hear it from the source. So we'll just, maybe we'll do the first one, Chris.
So on the basis of breathing as before, inhale gently, you feel the lungs from the bottom up. Exhale. So on the base of breathing as before, you inhale gently, you feel the lungs from the bottom up. Exhale. So on that base, you bring to your mind people that you hold dear. So people you're naturally close to, could be your partner, your children, your pets or your teachers, and you hold them there for a little while, and you try to generate a warm heart. See, by holding these dear people in your mind, there's a warmth arising in your heart. So part of the mind is focusing on the breath, on the breathing. Part of the mind brings forth these images. So you can make like a slideshow. You hold these dear people for a while in your mind, and you let the warmth, the loving care, the tenderness arise in your heart. And then you hold this tenderness, this warmth in your heart as your object of concentration. In the background, there's still the breath. And there's the slideshow or the small videos, small snapshots of people that are dear to you, or animals, or situations. And this generates a warmth in your heart, a tenderness. Then you hold this warmth and tenderness in your heart as your object of concentration. So you have to see how much you have to involve yourself with the slideshow. After a while, you can stay just on the tenderness in your heart. And you can hold maybe just one image. Or maybe you don't even need the image anymore. You can just focus on the tenderness in your heart, that warmth, that loving care. To do that for 20 minutes.
So once we have that tenderness in our heart, we imagine all the people we know around us. So all the people we love, our partners, our children, our family members, our friends. So we send that love to all of them, each and every one. May they be happy. May their disappointments ease. May they find what they're looking for, so like that. Can send that love from our heart to all of them. And then we imagine all the people we're indifferent to. We don't, maybe we see them in the hallway at work, don't really know them all that well. Maybe some of our neighbors who live, I don't know, some number of doors down, we see them come and go. People on the street that we may pass. All those beings, which is the vast majority of this world, may they all find the same happiness that we want for ourselves and for our loved ones. Finally, the people we dislike. Even they deserve happiness because fundamentally they're no different than us. Have the same delusions that motivate whatever they have done toward to us. Maybe something quite terrible. But still, it's because of their deluded minds that they've committed these actions or are committing them now. It may be difficult, but they still deserve. They have the Buddhahood, the seed of Buddha nature in their hearts. And if we can try to give them the same love that we would want for ourselves. Like that, may all beings in this universe, may they all attain Buddhahood. May they all practice virtue. May they all try to develop their bodhicitta mind so they can be of maximum benefit. So that's a form of the meditation that all the teachers suggest that we do to generate the bodhicitta mind. You know, to be able to, you know, the mind is just like any other organ that we have, right? It can be trained. So just like we go to the gym every day or every other day, and you know, we try to keep fit. So we can also practice those types of meditations to create the bodhicitta mind, it's not innate to us, right? I mean, well, it's innate to us for people we love, certainly, but people who we don't like and who we are indifferent to, it's not natural for us, right? And even with people we love, actually, it's interesting. They say that, you know, only a mother's love is actually pure intention. Every other love is, a mother's love for her child is probably pure intention. Every other form of love is not truly pure intention, because we expect something in return. You know, so if you think about it, you know, it's usually people we love or like are people who will love or like us back, right? People we dislike are people who love or like someone else, right? So bodhicitta doesn't discriminate between people who are kind to us and people who are unkind to us, right? That's the difference between a Buddha's mind or a Bodhisattva's mind and our minds, right? Our ordinary minds, is that the Buddhas don't discriminate, right? So they have the same love. They love their mother, you know, in the physical form, right? They love their mother in the same way that they love anybody else, whether that person tried to harm them or that person tried to help them, right? So that's the amazing thing about the quality of the Buddha's mind. He or she wants the same thing for every single person, no matter who they are, right? So we can generate that mind too. It's just a matter of training our mind. And that's the meditation. That's a form of the meditation. You know, traditionally they talk about, you know, those of you who know the sevenfold cause and effect, you know, you imagine your mother and all the countless beings as your mother and so forth and so on, right? So that's another form. That's the traditional form. But the one, you know, but this is another form that they teach. Okay. There was one thing that was really struck me when I was reading this, and can't remember where it was now. So in any case, so to end, at least we have to remember that, you know, we have to be kind to ourselves because we are human after all. You know, we, even if we try to be on the bodhisattva path, you know, those of us who have taken, you know, if you've taken, gone to certain teachings or whatever, you know, you've taken the bodhisattva vows, right? And those vows are not vows just for that day or whatever, right? It's actually a lifetime. So, you know, if we have taken bodhisattva vows, that means we have to practice those vows throughout our entire lives. But it's very difficult to practice the bodhisattva vows, and our teachers know that, right? So that's why they say that we have to be kind to ourselves as well. We have to have compassion. If we don't have compassion for ourselves, we can't have compassion for others, right? That's the first, you know, charity begins, compassion begins at home, you know? And so we have to be compassionate with ourselves, so we will make mistakes, we will fall down, you know, but we have to remember that what the ultimate goal really is, right? So it's not a straight line from here to there. It's a, you know, it's a lot of two steps forward, one step back. And we have to be kind to ourselves and know that, right? And so while we do try to generate the bodhicitta mind, we will be unkind to others. We just have to try to make an effort to try to do as little of those as possible. And if we do them, we try to purify them, try to make amends, right? And then if we can do that, then, you know, we're doing a pretty good job. And that's what it says in here at the end, you know, Patu Rinpoche says, he says, even if bodhisattvas do have, okay, so it says that in the sutras, it says in the age of decadence, which is what we are in, you know, they say the degenerate age, they always say, right? We're living in the degenerate age. Bodhisattvas may make mistakes when they relate with other people. It is therefore important not to dwell on the faults of others, but to train in pure perception of them. Even if bodhisattvas do have faults, they will nevertheless become Buddhas. Their faults, after all, are compounded phenomena. Well, they just mean that it's created because of causes and conditions, right? If you don't have if you remove the cause, the results will also not happen. So that's what it means here. If their faults, after all, are because of causes and conditions, and will consequently be worn away by the dint of practicing the path, right? Having the bodhicitta mind, it creates virtue and it removes, you know, negative imprints, right? So that's what this is about. So even if they have faults, even if we have faults, right, those of us who are on the bodhisattva path, the faults will be worn away by the dint of practicing the path. Nobody becomes enlightened by being faultless from the beginning. It is therefore said that to avoid dwelling on the defects and faults of others is a most important pith instruction. Right? That's what we have to remember, is we have to be kind to ourselves when we do fall down. But we have to remember that we have to continue to practice on the path, right? Even if we make mistakes. Okay. So I am told that we are running late. So we will do the dedication prayers that are on the back of the peach-colored sheet on the front. Maybe it's not peach, it's apricot, isn't it? Is it peach? Oh, you're right. So we're doing the ones on the pink, right. Sorry, I was looking at the other dedication prayers. Okay, so dedication verses from Master Shantideva's guide. May all beings everywhere, plagued by the sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. Well, space remains for as long as sentient beings remain. Until then, may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings, who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion, to the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatare, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And we'll do the Green Tara mantra, which is for Geshe-la's long, happy life. Om Tare Tu, Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu, 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 Tare Tu Re Soha. Thank you very much.